Good day, and welcome to the Equifax Investor Revenue Trends Update conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to John Gamble. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good afternoon. Welcome to today's conference call. I'm John Gamble, Chief Financial Officer. On today's conference call are Mark Begor, Chief Executive Officer, Trevor Burns, and Dorian Hare, our new Investor Relations Leader. Today's call is being recorded. An archive of the recording will be available later today on our website at www.equifax.com in the Investor Relations section under Events and Presentations. During the call today, we will be making reference to certain materials that can also be found under Events and Presentations. These materials are labeled 3Q20 Investor Update. During this call, we will be making certain forward-looking statements to help you understand Equifax and its business environment. These statements involve a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors, including the impact of COVID-19 and economic conditions on our future operations that could cause actual results to differ materially from our expectations. Certain risk factors inherent in our business are set forth in filings with the SEC, including our 2019 Form 10-K, our first and second quarter Form 10-Qs, and subsequent filings. Also, we will be referring to certain non-GAAP financial measures, including adjusted EPS attributable to Equifax, adjusted EBITDA, and adjusted EBITDA margin, which will be adjusted for certain items that affect the comparability of our underlying operational performance. Adjusted EBITDA is defined as net income attributable to Equifax, adding back interest expense, net of interest income, income tax expense, depreciation, and amortization. Our non-GAAP measures for completed periods are detailed in reconciliation tables, which are included with our prior period earnings releases and are also posted on our website. I would like to turn it over to Mark.
Thanks, John, and thanks everyone for joining us this afternoon. And welcome to Dorian Hare, who joined us today as our Investor Relations Leader. We're excited to have someone of Dorian's experience join the Equifax team. I also want to thank Trevor for his outstanding leadership over the past 2 years. Trevor was a great partner to me, John, and the Equifax team. We are pleased he will take on the important role of SFO for our GCS business going forward. And Trevor and Jeff will work with Dorian over the next few months as he transitions into his new role leading investor relations for Equifax. We continue to face unprecedented times during the COVID-19 global pandemic. I hope you and your families are safe and managing in this unusual environment. At Equifax, we continue to face the COVID challenge head on, and I'm proud of our team's performance and the resiliency of our business over the past 6 months. Even as many states and countries reopen, the COVID-19 global pandemic remains the most challenging consumer environment in our lifetime, leading our customers to place more value than ever on our unique data as they try to manage the impact of the pandemic on their own customers. Differentiated data is always valuable, but even more so in this unprecedented COVID recession. Building off our momentum from the second half of 2019 and strong first half 2020 results, our third quarter revenue trends have improved significantly from the framework we provided for third quarter back in July. While we are still unable to provide guidance for our operations in the third quarter or second half, we want to continue our transparency by sharing our near-term revenue trends with you this afternoon. Turning first to slide 4, based on current trends, we now expect revenue of between $985 million and $1.005 billion, with growth of between 10 and 12%, which is up strongly from the 4 to 6% growth framework we outlined in our July call for the third quarter. This will be the first quarter in Equifax's history with revenue approaching $1 billion. We've continued to see very strong growth in our U.S. mortgage businesses, USIS and EWS, as consumers continue to take advantage of record low interest rates in the residential refi market, and the volume of new home purchases were up strongly in June and July. We are also seeing our EWS unemployment claims business continue to deliver strong incremental revenue growth driven by new initial jobless claims applications. We expect incremental UC revenue to be between $15 and $20 million in the third quarter, which represents close to 20 basis points to our Equifax revenue growth rate in the quarter. EWS continues with very strong and broad-based performance, and USIS is operating very well with strong commercial momentum. We're also seeing broad-based improving trends across our international properties as shelter-in-place orders are lifted and economic activity improves. Equifax continues to operate exceptionally well in this challenging COVID environment. We continue to see strong customer engagement as we roll out recession-based products, leveraging our unique data assets, including TWN data, all featured in our industry-leading customer webinar series. Since March, we've held 29 webinars across the company with over 28,000 attendees. And next week, on September 15th and 16th, we'll be hosting a large virtual Equifax Customer Summit called Ignite Live 2020, focused on exposing our customers to our unique data assets, cloud capabilities, and resources to manage in this unprecedented COVID recessionary environment. U.S. Mortgage and Workforce Solutions are powering Equifax results, with both USIS and EWS continuing to perform exceptionally well. Our TWN employment and income data remains uniquely valuable with so much volatility around employment and income, as it is one of the only data sets that is updated each payroll cycle and at scale. The TWN database now has three times the records it had during the 2008-2009 global financial crisis, with close to 50% of the U.S. non-farm payroll in our database, which makes the data asset incredibly valuable to our customers. We continue to see opportunities to penetrate existing and new verticals like auto, P-loans, and cards, given the scale and value of the unique TWN database. We're also continuing to make positive progress on our cloud data and technology transformation, with completed milestones consistent with what we laid out in our July earnings call. As expected, USIS customer migrations have begun to accelerate, with over 3,000 migrations completed so far this year, and we continue to see greater system availability for our customers through August. We have real momentum around our cloud technology transformation and remain convinced that this investment will differentiate Equifax in the marketplace. The pace of new products continues to be strong, and we now expect to launch about 110 NPIs this year, which is up from about 100 in our July update and 90 last year. Under the leadership of our new product leader, Cecilia Mao, we are seeing enhanced focus, discipline, and energy in our NPI process. Innovation and new products is a big focus for our team and for me personally as we work to leverage our cloud investments to accelerate our growth in the future. And while we are very pleased with our strong performance in 2020, we are keeping tight constraints on our costs outside of investments in cloud technology, data and analytics, product, and security. Turning now to slide five, as I previously mentioned, we expect third quarter revenue to approach $1 billion, which will be the first time in our company's history, a huge milestone for Equifax. This comes off of exceeding $900 million of revenue for the first time in the fourth quarter of 2019. Underlying our strong revenue growth is our U.S. B2B businesses, USIS and EWS, where we expect their combined revenue in the quarter to be up over 25%. While we continue to benefit from very strong mortgage refi and new purchase volumes, we also continue to see strong structural and above-market growth in workforce solutions from new records, new products, pricing, and incremental data pulls per closed loan. Embedding our TWN data into mortgage workflows is reducing risk for our customers and generating more pulls of this unique data. Last month, the workforce solutions team surpassed another huge milestone, onboarding its 1 millionth employer into the TWN database, which is up from around 700,000 contributors a year ago. An outstanding achievement for Rudy Poehler and his team, and a reflection of the depth and breadth of our TWN database. While we are pressured from rising unemployment levels on our TWN database, we do expect to grow our TWN database in the third quarter. USIS commercial momentum continues in the third quarter with some competitive wins. Our EWS unemployment claims revenue continues to remain strong, but at a lower rate than the second quarter, given a sequential decline in initial jobless claims from the second to third quarters. As I mentioned earlier, we expect incremental UC revenue of about $20 million in the third quarter versus incremental revenue from UC claims of $48 million in the second quarter. We're also seeing improving trends across many of our international properties led by Canada, Latin America, and the Asia-Pacific region, which is primarily Australia. While still negative versus 2019, are much stronger than the 08-09 global financial crisis. And lastly, we remain on offense with new products. Our strong COVID response is driving incremental value for our customers and revenue for Equifax. Turning to slide six, where we compare our 2020 results to the 08-09 global financial crisis. Our very strong performance in second and third quarters, with Equifax delivering growth of over 14%, is significantly above the 2008-09 global financial crisis, where Equifax revenue was down 9-10% in the first three quarters of that recession. Over 55% of the Equifax portfolio is showing strong growth in this current COVID recession, driven by the strength of our U.S. mortgage businesses and the outside growth from Workforce Solutions. The strength, breadth, and resiliency of the Equifax portfolio is powering our results in the COVID recession. John will provide more detail later in the call, but at a high level, our revenue trends through early September are consistent with our new framework, which we are sharing with you today for the third quarter. Turning now to slide 7, back in April, we detailed some of our proactive COVID-19 response plans for our employees, customers, and consumers. We remain on offense and focused on growth. I'm very pleased with our team's performance at meeting and in many cases exceeding our goals that we set out back in April as we entered the COVID pandemic. We established clear priorities around our team's health and safety. Second, maintaining our customer and consumer service levels. And then lastly, delivering on our cloud data and technology transformation. We've reopened our offices in the U.S. markets starting in early June as shelter-in-place orders were lifted, and expect to open our remaining offices around the globe later this month on a red-blue rotational team basis and at 50% density. We've made customer engagement and support a top priority. Through virtual meetings, blogs, white papers, and other analytical tools, we've kept strong connections with our customers during these unusual times. In many cases, stronger than pre-COVID engagement. As we mentioned on the July call, we are seeing continued commercial momentum in the marketplace. We've also continued to support our customers with our Equifax COVID Plus Credit Resource Center, which contains new tools to manage the challenging environment, as well as providing free reports to U.S. and Canadian consumers. In every country where we do business, Equifax is in active discussions with lawmakers and regulators to enable the continued credit reporting that captures the status of consumer payments and lender accommodations. Specifically in the U.S., we are in regular communications with federal regulators, particularly the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and we share data trends with the Bureau regarding both consumers and furnishers. We protected our franchise by staying on offense with investments in our cloud data and technology transformation, new products, and M&A. You may have recently seen our announcement of the Ansonia acquisition, a small commercial tuck-in acquisition that provides unique U.S. commercial data in the logistics leasing space. As our customers have focused on the quality of lending during these challenging times and the credit health of their underlying customer base, we are delivering unique solutions to help them manage in this unprecedented environment. Our TWN employment and income data, NCTUE telco and utility data, and IXAI wealth data are unique data sets that give deeper insights on consumers in this challenging time. We're finding TWN to be particularly valuable given the scale of the database and the uniqueness of the income and employment data in this environment. We remain on offense delivering tailored solutions to our customers to address the effects of COVID-19, including our COVID response products, as well as our economic impact suite, enhanced credit trends, and mortgage products. We're also partnering with other companies like FICO to enhance these unique COVID solutions. And lastly, we've taken proactive steps to manage our P&L and our balance sheet, including our billion-dollar bond offering in the second quarter and remaining laser-focused on headcount controls and discretionary spending while balancing incremental growth investments I discussed earlier. Our team is committed to executing on our COVID response plans and staying on offense for our customers. Given the ever-changing economic climate and COVID environment, we're still unable to provide third quarter guidance and do not expect to provide fourth quarter guidance on our third quarter earnings call in a few weeks. However, John will again provide an illustrative framework to help you think about our performance through the end of August and the first few days of September. Now I'll hand the discussion over to John to provide more detail on our third quarter trends.
Thanks, Mark. As Mark pointed out, we are seeing significant improvements in our revenue trends from the discussion we had on July 23rd. This is principally driven by strength in U.S. B2B, USIS, and EWS, primarily from stronger than expected mortgage revenue. We are also seeing better than expected performance in international and in the consumer direct portion of our global consumer business. On slides 8 through 10, we are providing an update to the BU level trends we shared during our July earnings call. The charts show the implications on the 3Q20 revenue growth rate of recent revenue trends. As shown on slide 8, starting from the bottom right, U.S. B2B online revenue is strengthening substantially. We now expect U.S. B2B online revenue, which reflects USIS Online and Mortgage Solutions and Workforce Solutions Verifier, to be up over 25% in 3Q20, as compared to the expectation of up over 15% when we discussed our July earnings call. We are seeing continued strength in the U.S. mortgage market, and we now expect USIS mortgage revenue to be up over 45% in the third quarter and to be slightly stronger than the overall market. Workforce Solutions Verification Services mortgage revenue is now expected to more than double in the quarter, outgrowing the market by more than 50 percentage points. Overall, U.S. non-mortgage online revenue is roughly consistent with our expectation at the July earnings call. You're seeing improving trends in government, principally driven by our identity validation products, and in insurance as well as in rental. This is being offset by weaker performance in auto. Banking and lending is about flat on average across July and August. Workforce Solutions Employer Services is performing slightly stronger than we discussed in July earnings call due to continued stronger than expected new filings for unemployment insurance. Turning to slide 9, international is expected to perform slightly better than we expected in July, down about 8% in the quarter. The improvement is principally in Canada, where we expect constant currency revenue to approach flat in 3Q19, and in LATAM, which is seeing better than expected performance across the region. Australia is also trending generally positive, consistent with where we were in July. GCS Consumer Direct Revenue, our consumer subscription business in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K., are now expected to be up about 5% in 3Q20 versus last year. We're seeing consistent subscription growth this year in the U.S. Our GCS partner business is expected to be down about 10% in 3Q, with significant further weakening in 4Q from a reduction in lead generation partner revenues. As Mark mentioned, and consistent with our July earnings call, we are not providing third quarter guidance. While the current trends are better than we expected with the July trends, visibility remains a challenge, which adds to the difficulty in providing meaningful guidance. On slide 10, we are providing an update to the illustrative third quarter framework we provided in July for perspective on total Equifax 3Q20 performance. To the extent total Equifax revenue continues at the pace I described earlier, based on August trends, at current FX rates, 3Q20 revenue would likely be almost $1 billion, up 10% to 12%, with no material impact from foreign exchange. This is clearly stronger than the framework we discussed with you in the third quarter in July. At these revenue levels, adjusted EPS could be in the range of $1.50 to $1.60 per share, up 1% to 8%, and up significantly from our framework 6 weeks ago. Slide 10 also provides a walk explaining the translation versus 3Q19 of the revenue impact to pre-tax income and adjusted EPS. The ranges provided for 3Q revenue and adjusted EPS reflect current variability and trends, not a view of potential third quarter outcomes. Importantly, at these adjusted EPS levels, Equifax could deliver about $350 million in adjusted EBITDA in the third quarter. As we consider the balance of 2020, there is still substantial uncertainty regarding the pandemic and its impact on the economy, limiting our forward visibility and ability to forecast, and therefore we do not expect to provide fourth quarter guidance on our earnings call in October. We hope the detail and framework we provided on the impacts we have seen to date are helpful as you estimate Equifax third quarter results. Let me turn it back to Mark.
Thanks, John. Let's turn to slide 11 to wrap up. Equifax is performing very well in an extremely challenging environment. Our differentiated data, portfolio of recession growth businesses, cloud transformation, commercial focus, and increased focus on innovation and new products is paying off. We're extremely encouraged by the strong improvement in our revenue trends and the improving margins and cash generation, especially with our U.S. B2B businesses, as USIS and EWS commercial teams work together to bring commercial solutions to customers that support them through this unprecedented COVID recession. Our differentiated data, such as TWIN, NCTUE, and IXI, being built on a single cloud data fabric, is at the forefront of our industry-leading solutions. The continued strength and resiliency of our business in the second and third quarters allows us to accelerate our cloud data and technology investments and make incremental investments in innovation and new products, deploying our customer analytics sandbox Ignite around the world, and making strategic bolt-on acquisitions that complement our robust, unique data and geographic footprint. Our cash generation and balance sheet remain strong, which will allow us to make these investments, which are critical as a leading data analytics and technology company, which will also position us strongly for 2021 and beyond. As we navigate through the challenges of COVID-19, we are also navigating several very important social issues. At Equifax, we stand together focused on creating a culture of diversity and inclusion for our employees. We believe that a diverse work environment makes us a stronger company, enabling better outcomes for our customers, partners, and consumers. As we move forward, you'll hear me and us talk more about environmental, social, and government issues like diversity, consumer education, energy usage, data privacy, and security, to name a few. At Equifax, we are committed to making the world a better place. We recently launched on our Equifax.com website a new ESG homepage under the About Equifax tab. I encourage you to visit the website to learn more about our progress on ESG. We are very pleased with the performance so far in the third quarter and are energized about the future of Equifax as we invest for 2021 and beyond. With that, operator, we can open up the line for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take our first question today from Toni Kaplan with Morgan Stanley.
Thanks very much. Mortgage has obviously been a significant outperformer in the quarter so far. Can you talk about your expectations from here? Can the strength really continue into Q4 despite the really challenging comps? I know it's lasted a lot longer than I would have thought. So just how are you thinking about the next four quarters, just given mortgage has been so strong since 4Q of last year?
Yeah, Toni, as you know, that's a tough question. It's one, it's not our strong suit to forecast the mortgage market. Others are much smarter at that and, as you know, have been generally wrong with the strength of the current market. I would say that we've been surprised with the strengthening, meaning the market getting stronger. I think all of us were surprised by the impacts of COVID on the new purchase volume in June and July, and those seem to be continuing. As you may remember on the second quarter earnings call, we laid out at least some frameworks of things that we look at, you know, related to the mortgage market and, you know, some of the, you know, data that we collect from Freddie and Fannie and Black Knight and others around different forecasts. And all of those, you know, would indicate there's still a fairly sizable population of U.S. consumers that would benefit from a mortgage refi at this record low interest rate environment. As you know, that ticked down in the last couple weeks even further. So, you know, while it's hard to predict, the fundamentals seem to be there on the refi side for some continued strong volume as we go through the rest of the year. And as you know, with the Fed being pretty clear that they expect to leave the current record low interest rate environment through 2021, you know, that bodes well for that environment. And then on the purchase side, you know, we've seen this phenomena of, you know, renters buying homes, you know, primary homeowners buying a second home, you know, has really been fueling the purchase market. And, you know, it feels like there's some legs left on that one. So hard to predict, but, you know, I would say most of the fundamentals feel like there's going to be some strength through the end of the year. The question is how strong.
That's great. And what do you see as the main catalyst for recovery in USIS non-mortgage? Is it just reopening and consumers spending more, or would you view it as more NPI and new product and new customer wins? You know, just what are the drivers that will sort of pick that negative 8 to a more positive trajectory?
Yeah, there's no question it's impacted by the economic environment. You know, it's just there's been a cutback by our customers in mortgage originations. In the last, 60 days, we've seen, some reduced volume in auto as there's less inventory out there. whereas, you know, that was stronger in kind of the April, May, and maybe in the June timeframe. So the economic environment is clearly going to impact all of us in the space, and it impacts USIS and our other businesses in the non-mortgage space. But we've tried to be pretty clear that we're really pleased with the commercial momentum, you know, of the USIS team, whether it was in the second half of 2019, in the first quarter before the COVID pandemic, you know, how they operated in the second quarter. You know, their pipelines continue to be very strong. The commercial activity is strong. You know, we're seeing ourselves, you know, have competitive wins. And as you point out, the NPIs that, you know, we kept building out in 2018 and 19, we're now able to take to the marketplace. And as you heard from my comments, we're expanding our NPIs even further in 2020, up to 110 or so NPIs from what we thought would be around 100, call it 60 days ago. So those NPIs are also going to be quite positive. So the commercial momentum, the new leadership team we have there, we're encouraged, you know, by that impact in the marketplace. And then the economic headwinds are just tougher to forecast. You know, when those shelter-in-place orders, as you know, if you looked at kind of the April, May into June timeframe, you know, things were moving more positively, and then there was some, you know, hot spots in Florida and Texas and other markets, you know, following the Memorial Day weekend that, you know, curtailed some or resulted in some more restrictions and then curtailed some economic activity. So we're really fighting through that, and none of us know what's going to happen, you know, with a potential second wave and, you know, later in the flu season as we get into October, November. So it's still an uncertain economic environment, but we're very pleased with, you know, the commercial, you know, strength, I would call it, of USIS in the marketplace.
Thanks. Congrats on the progress in the quarter so far.
Thanks, Celine.
Next, we'll hear from Manav Patnaik with Barclays.
And then I had a question on the, you know, the verification business, the non-mortgage, you know, the trend is flat to down, I guess, at the moment. What are the big mixes there in terms of verticals? And can you just talk about some of the trends there? Like, when can we potentially see that slip, or is that just, you know, a factor of in unemployment?
Yeah, so the non-mortgage piece I would characterize similar to the prior question that we just had around economic activity. You know, there's no question that all of our businesses are impacted by, you know, the lower economic activity, by unemployment, by shelter-in-place orders, and that applies to EWS's non-mortgage business as well as USIS's and our international businesses. So I think you got to start there. You know, we're pleased with the performance, you know, broadly with EWS, obviously, whether it's in the mortgage side or non-mortgage side. You know, they're performing extremely well. We talked a little bit about record growth, which we expect to see record growth, you know, in the quarter. And, of course, contributors, you know, reaching a million is another real milestone there. John, what else would you add on Manav's question around EWS?
Yeah, so if you're just talking about non-mortgage verifications, Manav, right, so a much bigger portion of that business is government. Right, so we've seen the performance in government has been relatively strong, but then as you get into the non-government portions of the non-mortgage section of verification services, it's principally around auto, and then some debt services which are more related to government debt, which were where we've seen quite a bit of weakness, and then talent solutions where hiring hasn't really recovered yet. So I think we've seen some better overall performance driving us toward flat in the government portions of the business, and then kind of some of the three larger commercial segments are a bit little bit weaker because of their structure. But overall, you know, the performance in non-mortgage, given the economic environment at about flat, is still relatively good.
Got it. And, you know, Mark, early on you talked about your competitive wins in USIS, and I guess this is just more a broad question. Like, are there any areas, categories outside of workforce, clearly, because you guys are pretty strong there, where you're seeing competitive shifts, or is it kind of more of the same and everyone's dealing with the kind of volume headwinds?
And now, is your question around EWS or USIS or both?
Well, mainly outside of EWS, just the competitive dynamics there.
Yeah, I think you know well that USIS is the selling arm for EWS in the FI space here in the United States. So, you know, they have the ability to go to market with the very unique TWN data, you know, which is a competitive positive for them in the marketplace. And you also know, you think back the last couple of years of USIS, 2018, that business was obviously, struggling following the data security breach, was in the penalty box with some customers during 2018. That came out in 2019, particularly in the second half. So we're starting to see some real momentum, from the NPIs and commercial activity by USIS, with their customers. And as I mentioned, competitive wins or share gains, we've seen a handful of those, which is encouraging. And, you've seen their improvement kind of pre-COVID was going in the right direction sequentially. It's harder to see now because of the economic impact of the COVID recession. But, when we look at their pipelines and their win rates, we view that as quite positive on how they're, operating commercially and competitively in the marketplace.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Next, we'll hear from Kevin McVeigh with Credit Suisse.
Great. Thank you. Hey, I wonder, obviously, on the mortgage side, how much of the overperformance versus kind of the initial framework was just more transactions in terms of applications or more just frequency of pulls? So said another way, obviously it seems like there's been much more frequency through the channel. Is there any way to frame how much of the outperformance is, again, just more applications as opposed to increased frequency?
Yeah, there's no question that the market itself is much stronger now than we thought, 45 days ago or whatever it is. And it's been increasing and getting stronger, as you know. We talked a little bit about the purchase volume. I don't think any of us anticipated the strength of the purchase volume that started in June and continued in July. So that's clearly been much stronger. The refi volume has, continued to accelerate, meaning applications and actual volume, as the mortgage originators really learned to operate in a COVID environment, scaled up, some of their capabilities to process, the refi applications and refi mortgages. So that's clearly been a benefit. But as you point out, there's also an element of, the execution or performance. And, we're talking specifically about Workforce Solutions that is, growing dramatically above the market. That comes from records. It comes from new products. It comes from the system-to-system integrations that we've talked about before that the team is focusing on adding. All of those, are benefiting, that business and driving its revenue to be, really a multiple of the market growth, which is obviously quite positive, as we look forward to the rest of 2020 and into 2021.
That's helpful. And then just real quick, anything to call out in Canada? Obviously, that really seems like it's trending much better than what you would have thought as well.
Yeah, I think the shelter-in-place orders, loosened up in the last 30 days. They've got a mortgage market that's also benefiting, from the mortgage space, obviously much smaller in scale for us and for the industry than the United States, but that's been a positive in Canada. And pretty consistently, we've seen as the shelter-in-place orders get lifted and some level of commercial and consumer activity resumes, whether it's buying a car or, opening up a new credit card or doing in-store purchases, on a new credit card. That's been pretty consistent in the United States and around the globe as those shelter-in-place orders get lifted. What's hard to predict, is where it stabilizes and where it goes, in this COVID environment.
Thank you.
David Togut with Evercore ISI has our next question.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you comment on let's say the sustainability and convergence of the strength in mortgage due to these exceptionally low interest rates and some of the new use cases that have developed for the work number. As we look, let's say beyond the COVID era, perhaps interest rates stay low as per your comments about the Federal Reserve through 2021. But how do you think about use cases for the work number, kind of evolving post-COVID and how that might dovetail with demand for mortgage?
Yeah, so specifically, David, on mortgage with Workforce Solutions, if you look at Equifax over, as long as I've been here, probably before that, call it the last 2 or 3 years, you've seen Workforce outgrow the market consistently. And so we'll talk just about mortgage, but even in non-mortgage. And, then, As you know, the drivers of that are record growth. We're able to add records. And as you add records, remember, you know, we only fulfill, call it half of the inquiries we get because we only have, I say only, we have half of the database. So as we add records, they become monetizable or monetized, you know, really almost instantly. So that's the power of records. But then you also see the innovation that we've been driving in new products and new verticals in workforce solutions. Specifically on mortgage, we've talked a lot about the system integrations, where we see a sizable lift in the usage of the TWN data. You know, as you get to system integration versus a individual keying into our website to process an application and pull down an inquiry. So that's been a real positive. You've seen new products that we've been rolling out that have different capabilities, different price points. You know, that's been fueling their growth, and I would call it their outsized, you know, multiples of market, you know, kind of a performance, whether it's mortgage or non-mortgage. And then, of course, new verticals. Specifically in the COVID recession, we've talked about this before, you know, areas like in mortgage, we're seeing more pulls because of the value of the data. That value was there pre-COVID. Now there's a real catalyst because of the uncertainty around income and employment. And we think that's going to be a positive going forward. You could say the same about auto, where pre-COVID, the TWN data was used primarily in subprime income and employment verifications. Now you're seeing it in near prime and up in prime because of the lift that they get in the COVID recession. We expect that to be sustainable. And another area that we've talked about that we're really excited is around having TWN penetrate into the card space, which historically it was only used in portfolio management or in some collections activities, but having it being used as an addition to the credit file to get the higher predictability in this environment and in any environment, the lift that comes from that in cards, you know, we're seeing a lot of discussions happen, you know, with our customers there. And those are all positives, you know, for workforce solutions, which gives us, you know, confidence. You know, you asked about sustainability. It's hard to talk about sustainability of the mortgage market. We've given you our best thinking about that framework around interest rates and, you know, the population of U.S. consumers that would benefit from a refi. You know, you go into, you know, the sustainability of their ability to grow above the market. We've got some confidence in that. And then you add I-9 and some of the other areas that they're investing in, some of the new verticals, you know, we're energized about that for the future for workforce solutions. A lot of this, you know, as you remember, we covered on the June call with the workforce solutions team, and, you know, we'll make sure we keep sharing that with you because, you know, it's clearly our most powerful business, our most differentiated business.
Understood. Thanks very much.
Next, we'll hear from Hamza Mazari with Jefferies.
Hi, this is Mario Cortolacci filling in for Hamza. Just wanted to ask about the NPI. So you guys increased the guide from 100 to 110. You did 70 in the first half this year. I guess just obviously you've made great progress. Just I guess what is driving the slowdown? Is there anything that's stopping you from reaching, say, 140 because you did 70 in the first half? And then in conjunction with that, I guess what kind of success do you see in these new products? Is there typically, say, only 10 or 20% of them are wildly successful and the rest are see some revenue stream? I'm just trying to get a sense for how much of these new products typically contribute to a portion of the growth.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out the new products. It's a big priority of mine personally and the teams. You know, what do you attribute, you know, what I would attribute the increase in the number of NPIs is just our increased focus on it. As you know, the last couple of years, we've been focused on the technology transformation of the cloud. Now we're focused on leveraging it. And how do you leverage that is through new products and innovation. And you know, we brought some new people in. We're adding resources here. We did in the second half of last year and or so in 2020. So we've got a real focus on NPIs. They're not sequential, meaning if we did 70 in the first half, you know, is the likelihood we're going to do 70 in the second half? I would say no. The increase from 100 to 110 is a big jump for us because that's up from 90 last year and up from, I think, 70 the year before. So, you know, you should get a sense that we're putting more resources, people, and focus on new products. As you know, it fuels our growth. It allows you to have, you know, high return incremental revenue from the new products. So it's got a big focus of ours. You know, with regards to the success rate, there's a bell curve like anything. You know, you're going to have number that are very highly successful, others that are more in the middle, and then some that are less so. You know, that's why we're focused on trying to make sure we bring successful products to the marketplace by collaborating with our customers, but also doing more of them. And we're really energized around, you know, the second half of this year and really getting into 21 and 22. You know, that's, as I call it, our next chapter is really around new products. And, you know, my goal is to continue to increase the new products by putting more people on it, more resources on it, because that's how we can really leverage the cloud transformation and drive our top line growth to higher levels.
Great. And then my second question is on the work number records. Like you guys hit another milestone, I guess, with the number of contributors. And it feels like during COVID that in some portions of the economy that the sales cycle has shortened a bit with some urgency. And just wanted to know, are you seeing more businesses willing to work with you and willing to provide records? And could we see the pace of record acquisition pick up in the back half of the year?
Yeah, I don't want to give a forecast for the second half of the year on records, but I think you've seen pretty consistent growth in records from Equifax and Workforce Solutions, you know, over the last number of years. We talked on prior calls in the last 6 months during COVID that, you know, we do see a positive environment because our value prop is very strong with the companies that, you know, have these payroll records, you know, whether it's a payroll processor or the company itself. And, you know, if you think about it, we do it for free for the company. We do it securely and high degrees of privacy. We make sure there's consumer consent before the records are used, you know, so the employee's consenting it. We're open 24/7, where the company's doing it themselves. They're doing it from, call it 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And, you know, when do their employees go to get a mortgage or an auto loan? Typically at nights and on weekends. You know, so it's a very strong value prop that, you know, I would say was strong pre-COVID, which is why we've been adding records pretty consistently and, you know, has been even stronger probably in COVID. The other change was the benefit of the tech transformation is you picked up on, you know, we're going to be passing or we passed the million company or contributor mark, which is a huge milestone. But think about it. A year ago today, we were talking about 70,000 companies contributing, and now we're over a million. So the technology to be able to onboard that many companies, that many records is really one of the benefits of our cloud transformation that we started a couple of years ago. It's really providing real benefits. And you know, the value of new records, you know, is really powerful in Workforce Solutions because we can monetize them so quickly because we only fulfill, call it half of the inquiries we get. As you add new records, we go above 50%. So that's really positive.
Great. Thank you so much.
Our next question will come from George Tong with Goldman Sachs.
George. Hi, thanks. Good afternoon. It looks like Mortgage Workforce Solutions is definitely gaining share versus competitors, given strong record growth that you're seeing. If you look at your USIS business, can you talk about how mortgage volume growth compares with the broader industry and with your peers?
Yeah, I can't speak for our peers. I would suspect they're benefiting from mortgage growth the same way we are, but you should talk to them and get their perspectives. But as you know, most mortgages and virtually all mortgages in the United States, you know, when there's a credit file pulled, they pull all three. So our competitors are getting the same benefit we are from that. You know, we've talked about in the second quarter earnings call that, you know, we're even in USIS outgrowing the mortgage market slightly from new products and innovation that we're bringing to the marketplace. And, of course, as you know, we have our tri-bureau business, you know, where we're selling not only you know, directly, but we're selling through our tri-bureau business all three credit files, which is a part of the Equifax, you know, benefit in a strong mortgage market.
Got it. That's helpful. You gave a lot of details around revenue performance in the third quarter. Can you talk a little bit about your expected incremental margins and the kind of margin flow through you expect from the revenue upside versus your initial expectations, as well as progress on various cost initiatives, both temporary and permanent cost takeout? Thank you.
I'll maybe talk the second one first, and John can do the first one on the margins. You gave some color already in the framework, you know, on margins, you know, where we think, a framework for our EPSs. And as you know, incremental revenue is generally very high margin in our industry and for Equifax. On the cost side, we tightened up like most companies back in April. We've kept those controls in place. For example, on T&L, no one's traveling anyway because of the COVID recession, so that's clearly a benefit for us. When we think about the future on T&L, our expectation is it'll be down meaningfully, in the future from pre-COVID run rates, just because we're going to do less internal travel, for example, which was a meaningful part of our T&L. And, there may be some efficiencies through video, through customer travel, when, instead of going to see a customer three or four times, you might do two videos and one customer trip. We'll see how that unfolds. We're also, while keeping our belt tight, as you know, we're being quite proactive around investing in Equifax. The cloud transformation is an example. We've worked to try to accelerate our expending on the cloud transformation during the COVID recession over the last 6 months. We're also putting more resources and dollars into new products. This is a big priority of ours to leverage the cloud transformation, and you're seeing benefits of that around our NPIs going from 100 to 110. We're investing in DNA. It was another area, and of course, we're continuing to invest in security. John, maybe you want to touch anything else on margins that you didn't already cover?
Slide 10, kind of on the bottom right of the slide, right, we kind of give a walk that will walk you from the incremental revenue down to the incremental income. Variable margins are very high. A lot of this is mortgage. The variable margins on mortgage are a little lower, for the reasons Mark mentioned, because we have a mortgage solutions business. So it's a little lower than you would see on a growth on a pure online poll. And then you see a somewhat increase in some of the other expenses we referenced there. Some of that is just the fact that as we're performing much better, you're seeing some higher variable compensation and other items negatively affecting the walk. But overall, I'd say the variable margins that are flowing through, as you'll see on the right-hand side of slide 10 there, are quite high.
Got it. Very helpful. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Ashish Sabadra with Deutsche Bank.
Thanks for taking my question, and congrats on the solid progress in the quarter. My question was just on the GCS direct portion that has been trending really well. I was just wondering if you plan to increase your marketing effort on that front with the kind of progress that you're seeing.
Yeah, thanks. We have increased our marketing in slightly in 2020, as we've seen good take rates on the paid search that we've been doing for that direct business, both in the United States and Canada, and we'll continue to take advantage of that where we see the right financial returns.
That's very helpful. And then maybe just on FMS, that tends to be choppy and does have some difficult comps in this third quarter in particular. But I was just wondering if you could provide any color on the weakness there. Is that on the portfolio analysis, marketing front, or anything from the product, product perspective from card, auto, or P-loans, any color on that front? Thanks.
Yeah, we've talked in a number of calls since the COVID recession that a lot of the marketing originations work really was curtailed very, very sharply, in the second quarter, April, May, June, July timeframe. We're starting to see both discussions and some levels of marketing starting to pick up again, but still at levels below 2019. We would expect that to change, meaning we would expect marketing to increase as we go through the rest of the year. Our customers want to start marketing again, but they obviously want to do, effective marketing, meaning to consumers that they know can pass their underwriting. So, I think that's the work that's happening with our customers. On portfolio management, that's been fairly strong, through the COVID recession, and we're seeing a lot of dialogues with customers as they work to manage their portfolios and the expectation of higher delinquencies after accommodations come off and some of the complexities of the consumer in this current environment. I think we talked on the second quarter call about, the increased usage of like twin income and employment data in some of the portfolio reviews as a result of the unusual environment around consumers about who's working, how much are they paid, if they had been furloughed, or they had a salary reduction, and who can, pay back their loans, who should you call in a collection center, all those activities are strong, and we expect that to continue to strengthen as we get further into the COVID recession.
That's very helpful, Greg. Thanks.
Andrew Steinerman with J.P. Morgan has our next question.
Just a quick one. When I was listening to you describe mortgage, I sensed that you were saying that the upside to mortgage in the third quarter is coming from purchase, not refi. Could you just verify that, and you know, maybe it's coming from both?
It is both, Andrew. I didn't intend to try to say it was both. I think what we saw in June and July was a real uptick in purchase that we didn't see in really in the last number of months. As you know, it's been at, I think, record levels in June and July, the purchase volume. I just wanted to highlight that. But refis are very, very strong, no question about it.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Our next question will come from Andrew Nicholas with William Blair.
Hi, good afternoon. Most of my questions have been asked. I did want to ask quickly about the potential recovery timeline for Europe. Obviously, it's been a bit slower to rebound compared to the other regions. Any color you could add there?
Yeah, Andrew, we attribute it all to the longer and deeper shelter-in-place orders, not only there, but you could call it Australia, which is a little more resilient. Most of the international markets had sharper and deeper shelter-in-place orders where there was just, you know, it's harder to have any commercial activity, and perhaps in those markets there wasn't as much innovation, you know, around, you know, buying a car, you know, through the internet, you know, that was happening here in the United States, you know, through some of the COVID shelter-in-place orders. So as shelter-in-place orders are lifted, you know, we're seeing some uptick in volumes. We would expect that to continue. But as you know, there's in some of those international markets, like Latin America, you know, the COVID, you know, crisis is still quite challenging, and the shelter-in-place orders are still, you know, fairly strong. So it's really trying to handicap when are those going to get stabilized and when will the governments, you know, allow some consumer and commercial activity.
Just as a reminder, right, for us, Europe is principally the – a bit of Spain, but principally the UK.
Yeah.
Right, so maybe that's a good place to follow up. In terms of, you know, debt management, and I know you have the contract with TDX. Do you have any visibility into when that might come back online? Is that a 2021 event, or what are the kind of dynamics for us to consider there?
Yeah, you said a contract with TDX. We own TDX. We have a contract with UK government. I think it was what you meant, you know, for debt collection services as a part of our TDX business. You know, if you look at prior recessions, there's generally a lag in how TDX or debt, you know, collections generally recover. Early in the recession, those things are tightened down and there's less activity, which is what we're seeing now. That's been exacerbated, you know, by the depth of the COVID recession, where governments and many companies, either being encouraged by governments or, you know, are unilaterally just curtailing some of the collection activities, you know, until the consumers are more stabilized. So, you know, as we think about, we'd expect to see some improvements as the year unfolds between now and year end, and certainly 2021, if the recession, you know, improves, meaning there's less unemployment and, you know, the economy improves, we'd expect to see that business, you know, recover in some fashion.
Great. Thank you.
George Mihalos with Cowen has our next question.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I just wanted to ask on the workforce. I know there's momentum around record growth and pricing, and obviously deeper penetration of select verticals. But I'm just curious, as you look at the performance of that business, do you think maybe, you know, Equifax has maybe somewhat underappreciated how price inelastic that business is? And is there any reason why, even in an environment, say for whatever reason you don't have record growth in a particular year, you wouldn't be able to take some measure of pricing?
Well, we you know, I think we talked at some high levels around pricing, and there's no question that business has, you know, probably the most unique data, which generally means it's got the ability to, you know, have some pricing power in the marketplace. You know, we don't see a time frame where we're not going to grow records. You know, it's a clear priority of ours. It's one that we've got a dedicated team on, and we've got a pretty good consistency of adding records. Obviously, you know, the database is larger, but it's still, you know, a little bit over half of the non-farm payroll now, so there's still lots of records for us to go get. And as we've talked about in the past too, you know, we're not only looking for W-2 records, but also 1099 or self-employed records, meaning we want to expand the kind of employment verification or data assets that we have. And Workforce has, you know, multiple levers for growth. We've talked about new products on the call we had with that team back in June, that they're, you know, rapidly rolling out new products that at different price points, new verticals. You point out penetration in existing verticals, meaning more pulls and things like mortgage is obviously, you know, highly accretive to the revenue and margins. So there's just a lot of levers that that business has, you know, in the marketplace that, you know, we think the COVID recession is actually accelerating some of those because of the uniqueness of the data.
Okay, that's super helpful. And just one quick follow-up. I mean, if we look at the mortgage business broken out on the USIS side versus obviously the workforce side, you've had a couple quarters now where, you know, workforce is sort of growing at two times that rate of USIS growth, somewhere thereabouts. Is there anything unique this year that is influencing that relationship? Maybe putting it another way, is there a reason why workforce shouldn't be able to outperform USIS mortgage at sort of a similar level going forward?
Well, 2X is quite significant, you know, outgrowing the market, as you know, and I think anyone would agree to that. You know, we have confidence in the ability to continue to roll out new products. We have confidence in the ability to, you know, add records going forward at some pace, the ability to get increased penetration in verticals, the ability to enter new verticals. You know, you've heard me talk about Workforce Solutions being in the second or third inning, which means, you know, we just see a lot of opportunities for that business to grow going forward. Now, I would say that their growth in 2020 has been extraordinary. To grow at that pace versus mortgage or the mortgage market or others, you know, it's going to be hard to sustain that kind of outperformance. But the ability to outgrow the market, you know, we've seen a long history, you know, in Workforce Solutions for them to be able to do that. I think in 2020, a number of things just, you know, played in their favor. Most impactfully is the value of that data. You know, it's just immensely valuable in this unique COVID environment, which is just driving a lot of new usage of the data.
Great, thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Jeff Mueller with Baird.
Jeff. Yeah, thanks. Good afternoon. The mortgage revenue in OIS, how much of that is just single file? I guess what I'm wondering is, are there any other meaningful products or ways to outperform the market? And I recognize there's innovation like trended data, but is it all or almost all just single file pulls, or are there other meaningful products in OIS mortgage?
Yes. So most of the incremental products like undisclosed debt monitoring, things like that, actually flow through Mortgage Solutions, right? So yes, there's absolutely ways for us to outgrow the market. There's absolutely ways for us to deliver new products, and we do that, but most of that delivery is through Mortgage Solutions.
Okay. And then, you know, when I see the framework, I think every revenue line stable or better than the July update. I guess I heard two things that maybe are a little worse, or one not worse, but so I guess I heard U.S. auto down a little. I think previously it was up a little, and then the GCS partner channel, it sounds like partner members are still in a net attrition trend, so worse in Q4 year-over-year than Q3. Do I have those two right, and any other kind of factors that, you know, maybe weren't stable or better within the context of a lot that is?
You covered those in your comments.
Jeff, those were the two that we talked about that were most significant, right? I can't tell you that there were no other verticals that didn't have a negative trend, but those were the ones that were the most meaningful. And generally speaking, you know, what we saw, as you said, is generally improving trends, you know, a kind of even across non-mortgage, right? EWS non-mortgage was a little better. USIS non-mortgage, we said, was kind of flat, right? So, And it's kind of flat to slightly down, and that was really driven by auto. We haven't really seen much of a recovery yet in banking and lending, but I think that's more market-driven. As we said, that's kind of flat through July and August. Just got to remember, things are that we're giving trends, but the trends are choppy, right? And as we get, obviously, through September and give you a third-quarter update, we can give you a lot more detail.
Jeff, on auto, what our teams are telling us on auto is that, you know, with the COVID shutdowns of the auto manufacturers back in the second quarter, there's inventory issues, meaning there's less inventory to sell, which is having some impact on auto. Now, does that correct itself now that they've been back producing at some point later in the fourth quarter? We would hope so. Yeah, in some of the new model year stuff comes out. So I think that's kind of on auto. And as John pointed out, on GCS, we have a partner business where we sell our data to third parties. And the one area we pointed out some pressure on was in the customers that are using our data for lead gen marketing. And as you might imagine, if the FIs aren't doing marketing on their own, they're not going to do much from a third party getting leads. So that's the one that we pointed out, which is very similar to our FMS marketing business. You know, will that recover, you know, as they start doing some, you know, originations and marketing, you know, perhaps. But, you know, we're expecting that to stay, you know, fairly tough as we go through the, you know, latter parts of the year.
Got it. Thank you both.
Our next question will come from Bill Warmington with Wells Fargo.
Good evening, everyone. So first of all, congratulations to Trevor and to Dorian on the new positions. In terms of the question for you, we've been talking a lot this evening about the work number and the higher frequency there driven by multiple pulls during the mortgage process. And so I wanted to ask, as if I'm a high frequency pull user of the work number in my mortgage pool, how many times am I pulling the work number data, and at what point in the process am I doing that? I mean, I assume application would be the obvious one, but other than that.
Yeah, actually, it was historically, Bill, the TWN data was pulled really at closing. You know, and that's a very broad use case in mortgage for the TWN data to verify someone's still working and someone's still employed before you close the loan tomorrow with that, you know, homeowner. So that's the historical place it was used. What we're seeing is mortgage originators increasingly pull it earlier in the process and more often in the process. That's quite common with the credit file. For example, to pull a credit file at application, so you can assess as a mortgage originator, do you want to invest the $2,000, $3,000, or $4,000 in that money they spend in the mortgage origination process? They want to make sure they spend it on a consumer that's going to be able to close. In increasingly COVID, and now with COVID, we're seeing those pulls of not only the credit file, but also the income and employment data from Workforce Solutions earlier on, because as you know, there's so much volatility around income and employment, and having that pulled at the earlier in the stage or multiple times in the application process to make sure, is that consumer still employed? Are they still going to be able to close? Should I keep investing in this consumer's application versus another consumer's application? You know, that's really where we're seeing the increased income and employment pulls. And, you know, I think on average, the credit file is pulled 2x where the income and employment data is pulled today, roughly. And the opportunity for us is to get the income and employment data pulled as often as the credit file in a mortgage application process. And every mortgage originator is different, but that's what we've seen is the increased pulls have been, you know, really attractive to us. And, of course, we've also talked about with you some of the new products we're rolling out to help facilitate that, you know, to – have more pulls, you know, for that mortgage application, actually selling that up front, you know, to the mortgage originator in a prepackaged way that really facilitates multiple pulls.
Yeah. Well, what I'm trying to get at is, I mean, if I do some brute force math and I see the, you know, mortgage up 45% and the EWS mortgage up 100%, you could argue that you've got a 2-to-1 ratio there. But I know that that's, you know, probably misleading, but I'm looking at it as someone who's a high frequency user. Are they pulling it today 4 times? And what I'm trying to do is to try to get a sense for if this evolves into a best practice for mortgage lenders to be pulling TWN at 3 points during the application process, what does that mean for potential revenue?
Yeah, there's no question it's accretive. The problem with your high-level analysis is that there's a number of things impacting that. You know, so records is one, right? Higher hit rates, you know, drive that outperformance. That's clearly one and a very meaningful one. New products is one. The additional polls, you know, is one per application. Then you've got the system-to-system integrations, you know, which really, in essence, drive polls. But the system-to-system integrations is very, very powerful in that equation also. And then you've got, you know, mortgage originators really, you know, seeing the value of pulling the data earlier, income and employment data earlier is kind of another element there. So there's a number of levers that are, you know, really driving that outperformance to the market.
Got it. All right. Well, listen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Next, we'll hear from Gary Bisbee with Bank of America Securities.
Hey, just one quick one. Thanks for sneaking me in at the end here. You mentioned COVID and recession response products and talked a bit about those last quarter as well. I guess, can you give any more color on sort of what types of things those are? And is there a more pro-cyclical angle to these offerings such that, you know, there's sort of a handoff from, hey, I need this to assess recession, to here's what I'm going to do in growth mode, or is a better way to think about it that you'll have to sort of refill that pipeline with another product sale to offset that when it sort of runs its course with your customers?
Yeah, I would say there's a portion of these COVID response products that are really COVID-oriented around, like, you know, is a consumer in an accommodation mode, you know, with a lender, and then how do you think through the real credit standing of that consumer when they're being shown as current. So there's some elements of that. But then a whole bunch of them are really where we're trying to take the company on multi-data assets, you know, leveraging twin data, using, you know, some of the new data assets and trended data that we have in the not only COVID environment, but we believe those are going to be sustainable in a post-COVID world, meaning in a normal economic environment because of the higher predictability or the higher benefit that our customers get, you know, in interacting with consumers. So it's clearly a mixed bag, and I would say, you know, most of them are, you know, not specific to COVID, but there's definitely a handful that are.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Andrew Jeffrey with Truist Securities.
Appreciate you taking the question. Just a quick one on EWS, sort of aligned with what Gary just asked, generally on those COVID response products. Obviously, a remarkable increase in the number of contributors to the database, pretty much exponential. Can you talk about the ability to monetize those going forward versus, you know, what portion of those new contributors may just have responded to the very challenging and abruptly challenging macro environment? In other words, what kind of retention do you think you can get from some of those smaller employers, and what's the long-term monetization outlook?
Yeah, our experience when we add a new company or employer to the database is they're very sticky. You know, there's real value to their employees. There's value to the HR team and us doing this for them securely with high degrees of privacy for the employees and the company and you know, with no cost to them. So we don't see a lot of turnover in our, like, very little turnover. You know, once a company starts using us for income and employment verification for their employees, they stay with us. So, and as you point out, the increase from a year ago is really very strong. And it's very valuable, actually, because we're moving more into mid-market America, you know, which, you know, big companies have a wide range of employees work for them. But, you know, many times they're higher income employees. You know, when you get into mid-market America, you're getting into different geographies that make the data very valuable. You're getting into different industries. And so we're really energized to, you know, have a million companies contributing now and, you know, heading, you know, to continue to grow that as we go through the rest of the quarter and into the latter parts of the year and into 21 and beyond.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Our final question will come from Shlomo Rosenbaum with Stifel.
Hi, thank you for squeezing me in at the end. First, I just want to kind of echo what Bill said, welcoming Dorian, who I think a lot of us know over here, and wish also Trevor success in his new job. And hopefully at one point in time, Jeff Dodge will be able to ride off into the sunset like he's always wanted to.
At some point.
Always the last few years. I want to just ask a little bit, just you guys are doing, very well in terms of investing into tech transformation, speeding up things in NPI. One of the critical kind of pinch points could be kind of the customer migrations, and you noted 3,000 of them. Are you also able, are you seeing that things are going on the pace that you want? Are you seeing the ability to kind of accelerate those the same way you're accelerating some of the other things, with obviously the potential benefit of being able to turn things off at a quicker pace than you had anticipated?
Yeah, as you know, that's really important. We've talked about it many times. You know, when you think about the tech transformation we launched in 2018, the first challenge was getting the technology and the single data fabric and the cloud right, and we feel good about that. And then, as you point out, the second one is migrating your customers to our new technology and to our new data. We're pleased with the pace we're on. The milestones we set out earlier in the year, actually pre-COVID, we're meeting or exceeding on both the technology and migration front. But we still have a lot of migrations to complete, so there's work to be done, through the end of the year and as we go into 2021 to get that completed. But we're pleased with the pace, and you have to understand, customers want to make the migration, meaning they want the new technology, they want the new access to the database, they want the always-on capabilities. So the environment is right for that. We're working to try to accelerate it, but as you know, you got to work through your customers' IT department's timetables. Our real customers are the data analytics teams, the risk teams, the marketing teams, all the customers we have. They all want the data and the new technology as quickly as they can get it. It's just a matter of working through with our customers. And we've got due dates lined up. John and I meet with the team every month to go through their schedule, their progress. And as we've talked about before, we have dedicated migration teams in each of our businesses that really own working with each of our customers, because we wanted our commercial teams to be able to keep selling while the migration teams took the lead on working the migrations with our customers.
So is that moving faster, as fast as it before, or not quite as fast?
I would say on pace. It's not faster, it's not slower. It's moving the way we thought it would. It's moving, I think, at the right pace. You'd always want to do it faster. We're always looking for ways to accelerate it, but we're pleased with the pace. And I would say, it's on plan, with what our expectation was when we started the year pre-COVID, which I think is a good thing.
Okay, great. And then just my follow-up on the accelerated technology investments that you guys have been making. Can you just highlight a few of them for us? Is it people? Just give us a few examples as to what's been going on.
Your question is on technology or product or both?
More on the technology side.
Yeah, it's really we've taken advantage of the COVID window and some of the productivity we saw from our technology teams, early in April and May to tell Bryson Keller, our technology lead, keep going. If we can do things faster, we will. We've seen some increased investments around our new Luminate identity and fraud platform. What else would you talk about, John, that we're trying to accelerate?
We've accelerated some keying and linking investments.
Yep.
We've accelerated some of the investments specifically around the requirements that we have to deliver to the federal government, right? So some very targeted investments, some of them relatively large, that we think will really position us well next year to allow us to complete that customer migration that you talked about, right? So we're trying to get ready to go fast.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
That will conclude today's question and answer session. I will now turn the call over to John Gamble for any additional closing remarks.
I wanted to thank everybody for joining us this evening.
Thank you, and that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.